Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. And tonight on Hercules and the Space Gods, I'm very honored to have Michael and Diane Duncan from the Sixth Revelation. And we'll be discussing planetary sovereigns. Greetings and welcome, Michael and Diane.
Hey, thank you, Hercules. Greetings.
And greetings from Diane.
Greetings to both of you. How are things in California?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're in California. Yes, we're in sunny Southern California. It's been hot the last couple of days, but nothing that we can't handle. You know, maybe like low 90s, but it's really beautiful out, and we're hoping that that New Jersey is doing well too. How's New Jersey?
New Jersey, in our part of it, has been humid and raining intermittently with some thunder. So the rain cools everything off for a little while, and then it becomes part of the moisture in the air and adds to the heat. So we're getting the best of both, I guess.
I gotcha. Well, now, we're so happy to – yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we're so happy to be on today, Hercules. Thank you for the invitation.
And thank you for coming on. It's always a pleasure to have you guys on. I enjoy speaking with you very much. And our topic today is very interesting because there are so many different views about the planetary sovereign. So I'd love to understand what the understanding is of the Sixth Revelation and the Urantia book and any other views you might care to share about them.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, we're ready to go. So go ahead and... go ahead and probe.
Now, the way I have learned is that the seven planetary sovereigns are based on the old system of the visible planets, which were five at the time, and then the two luminaries, which were the moon and the sun. And there was, in ancient Babylon, an attempt made to equate the days of the week with the gods and the planets. In antiquity, heaven or the vault of heaven was considered to be something fixed. And beyond the fixed heaven was the Pleroma or the Empyrean, as it's sometimes called. So that was kind of like going into another dimension. And in ancient times, they didn't believe that the planets were in outer space, but they believed that the planets were between the earth and the firmament. And so the planets each had their spheres in the atmosphere as it approached the firmament and the ether. And the visible planets are going in order of the days of the week, the day of the sun, which is Sunday, the day of the moon, which is Monday. Tuesday is sacred to Tu, the Anglo-Saxon god of war, which would be Mars or Aries in the Greco-Roman system. Wednesday is Woden's day in Anglo-Saxon, and in Greco-Roman that translated into Hermes. Thursday is Thor's day in the Anglo-Saxon, and that equates with Jupiter or Zeus. A Friday is Freya's day or Frigga's day, depending on who you choose to trust in terms of the days. And that is equated with Venus or Aphrodite. And then Saturday is Saturn's day, which wasn't translated into the Anglo-Saxon. And Saturn is Kronos to the Greeks, and he's Saturn to the Romans. So that's a very old system, and in a lot of magical books, those equations are there for everyone to see. And I found that although there are other systems, the one that works best for me and what I do is the old traditional one. So the gods, again, of the different planets would be the sun. That differed. Some people equated with Hyperion, some with Helios, some with Apollo, and some with Hercules. Guess which one I ascribe to. The moon.
Oh, we couldn't guess. Never
the
could.
The moon is identified with Thea. It is identified with Selene, with Artemis, with Diana, and also with Athena. And that's the one that's in my tradition with Athena. That's Monday. Tuesday is Aries. Wednesday is Hermes. Thursday is Zeus. Friday is Aphrodite, and Saturday is Kronos. And there's a lot of information contained in there if you use that system. With the other systems, what I've learned over the years is that different groups of celestials will work with different configurations for different projects. And so therefore you'll have different celestials assigned to these planets and these days, and that goes with colors and rays, and you could spend months talking about all the associations. Some people divide not only the days but the day into hours that are astrological. And for the work I do, I really don't need to be that specific. Some, again, ascribe days and nights to different deities. I never found that that helped me. I've experimented with some of the other systems, especially the theosophical one. And there, too, there are wide variations in not only the celestials, but the order in which they are. And I have theurgists on one of the shows. We've been discussing things for years, and they have all sorts of ancient and modern ways of calculating the planetary sovereigns. But ultimately and eventually, it's about relationship. So it's what your relationship happens to be with the planetary sovereigns. And the nature of your mission here on Gaia at this particular point in time. So that'll be my introduction to what I work with. What information have you gathered from the celestials? I heard that the planetary sovereigns are being reassigned, and I'm really excited to hear about that.
Yes, Michael is going to give you an update in just a minute on all of that. But I wanted to put in, since you did such a beautiful job of what you gave to us, and I agree with every single thing you said, but I wanted to put in what the Urantia book says about our solar system. And it's just, they call them transitional cultural worlds. And then what we have found out, and this will just take a couple of minutes, and I'll let Michael go on. They're saying the seven major worlds swinging around Jerusalem. Now, they call the headquarters of our solar system is called Venus. And Venus is the headquarters of Jerusalem. So they call the whole system Jerusalem. And that's what we are saying, too, that all of the planets in our solar system are called Jerusalem, but the headquarters is Venus. So I'm just going to go on with each planet here from the Urantia book just to give a little bit of that. And that is planet number one is called the Finaliter world, and we are saying that is Jupiter. And that's the headquarters of the Finaliter core of the local system. And it's surrounded by the receiving world, seven mansion worlds. And I wanted to put this in because a lot of people do wonder, where are the seven mansion worlds? They're on Jupiter. So, and that's dedicated so fully to the scheme of mortal ascension. The second planet is the Earth. And we are calling that the Urantia world. Now, they do not give this in the Urantia book, that Jupiter is the Finaliter world. We are doing that.
Okay.
And the Urantia world is listed in the Urantia book, but we are saying that is Earth. That planet is the headquarters of the supervisors of Urantia life and is surrounded by seven spheres where the Urantia chiefs train their associates and helpers and so forth. Planet number three in the Urantia book is called the Angelic World. We are saying that's Mercury. And this is the headquarters of all the seraphic hosts engaged in system activities and so forth, angelic training and so forth. Number four in the Urantia book is called the Super Angel World. We are saying, sixth revelation, that's Michael and me, are saying that's Venus. That's where Father Uranus is in, and Mother Iris, and Rhea, and Venus. A lot of the, a lot of our wonderful gods are working out of number four world, the super angel world. Number five in the Urantia book is called the World of the Suns. This headquarters is headquarters for the divine suns of all orders, and we are saying, Michael and I are saying, that's Neptune. Because, see, people reading the Urantia book have no idea where these worlds are. And we're saying it's very simple. All you have to do is look out, and it's our own solar system. And Jerusalem is our own solar system, and the capital is Venus. So number six, the world of the spirit, we are saying is Saturn. And that sphere serves as the system rendezvous of the high personalities of the infinite spirit. Number seven, the world of the Father in the Arantia book. And people have no idea what planet that is, but we're saying that's Uranus. That seems so likely. I mean, my goodness, it says the world of the Father. This is the silent sphere of the system. No group or beings are domiciled. There's a great temple of light occupying a central place, but no one can be discerned within. Okay, all beings of all the system worlds are welcome as worshipers. So these are the planets that they give in the Arantia book, and I wanted to add that to what you were saying because I think it's important people know that each one of these planets are in our own solar system and that all of these gods and celestials we're talking about are all working, sometimes several of them on a sphere or maybe just a few, but lots and lots of angels and other gods are helping. So I just wanted to add that part. And then Michael was going to bring in your questions and what we have about the new sovereigns.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, so yeah, I just wanted to give just a tiny bit of background really quick of Hercules that, you know, Diane and I have studied the theosophy, the ancient and modern theosophy, Rosicrucianism, Buddhism, you know, Eastern, Western philosophy. You know, we've learned about the rounds, and you know, the we've learned about the logos, the logoi, who you know, oversee planets, create planets, so on and so forth. But you know, recently, within the last 10 years, we have. We've really started delving into the Urantia book, and we see that there are a lot of parallels there. I was past president of Urantia Book Los Angeles Society, UBLA, also education on the board for education for Urantia University, and Diane was too, and she was on the board for UBLA also. We've been delving into the Urantia book. Heavily in the last 10 years, we've been a part of the community. We're starting to see Hercules. It's very interesting. We're starting to see how these planets and these systems and these universes, you know, are all created and administered and upheld, nurtured by all of these gods and goddesses. And we've actually, you know, since we've been talking with you, and we've had a wonderful association with you, we've noticed some parallels with Urantia book gods, goddesses, you know, celestials, and the Greek, mm-hmm. of course. So I want to give a little context going back to what Diane was saying.
Okay.
She's talking about the solar system planets that she listed. Like she said, you know, the Urantia book really doesn't go into our solar system. The first stop for the Urantia book is the mansion worlds after our earthly sojourn. And that gets us into local system, that gets us into constellation, that gets us into local universe, super universe, and so on and so forth. But we're being told that gods and goddesses are, as you're saying, working with the planets. They're working with the planets in our solar system. I mentioned the word local system. The local system to which our planet belongs is called Satania.
Okay.
It's about 1,000 inhabitable planets big, and it has a system sovereign. The local system, of course, has a capital. It's like our countries, our states, our cities. It has a capital. And the capital of the local system of Satania, 1,000 inhabitable planets, is called Jerusalem. We've been told, as Diane mentioned to you, that our solar system is this capital system of Jerusalem, with these seven planets as the major architectural spheres or headquarters spheres for Jerusalem. So our local system of Satania, according to the Urantia book, Lucifer was the head. Lucifer, we've heard of Lucifer, of course, in the Bible and everything like that. We've heard of Lucifer, in Theosophy, he's the light bearer. He's a beneficent. Mm-hmm. He's a beneficent force. In the biblical and the Christian, Lucifer's a bad guy, you know. So the Urantia book carries on kind of the biblical tradition there that Lucifer is the bad guy. He creates he creates the fall of angels and so on and so forth in the Urantia book, that he defaulted. Well, when he defaulted, he was deposed, according to the Urantia book. And his emergency successor became Laniforge. So Laniforge right now, according to the Urantia book, is the system sovereign of Satania.
Okay.
I talked to you about the parallels, the Greek parallels. According to the sixth revelation, Hercules, the system sovereign of Satania, Laniforge, is none other than Dionysus in the Greek. That's what we've been told, and we've also been told that Dionysus, or this Laniforge, is also Gautama Buddha in the Eastern tradition. He is the head, and in the Eastern tradition, Gautama Buddha is the planetary ruler, and Neo Theosophy as well. That Lord Maitreya will take over from Gautama Buddha, and that's in the Eastern too, not just Neo Theosophy. So Laniforge, Gautama Buddha, Dionysus is the system sovereign over 1,000 inhabitable planets right now. We are told, Hercules, that Lucifer, the good guy Lucifer, he's Hephaestus. He is Gabriel in the biblical tradition. Gabriel is also in the Urantia book as the bright and morning star. So he's the bright and morning star. He's the firstborn of Zeus and Hera, the local universe father and the local universe mother. And I hope I'm not confusing it too much, but that's on a local universe level. We have Zeus and Hera, who are local universe father and mother. They give birth to the bright and morning star, Gabriel, also known as Lucifer. Gabriel is in charge of the whole local universe, which is 10 million inhabitable planets. He's like the executive director, whereas Zeus and Hera are the rulers of Nebadon, creators of Nebadon, which is local universe, 10 million inhabitable planets. So we go back down from the local universe father and mother to Gabriel, then back down to Dionysus. And of course, in Neo Theosophy, we hear about Sanat Kumara, who is also Gabriel in our in Sixth Revelation, working with Gautama Buddha and working with Maitreya to help our planet. Okay.
That is great. That is, and I forgot my question. Go ahead.
So you were talking about what the sixth revelation says about the celestials, about celestials ruling the planets and helping the planets, so on and so forth.
Before you go forward, I remembered my question. I just want the audience not to get confused about the good guy Lucifer and the bad guy Lucifer. Words change meanings over the years, and things that meant something to the ancients do not mean the same thing to us in the here and now. And here's a very mundane example. The word gentle meant somebody who owned land. Mm-hmm. Now it means somebody who's very kind and non-violent and, you know, gentle. But if you're talking about gentles centuries ago, you'd be talking about people on land. And the same thing with someone who's noble. Now it means someone who's exalted and acts from a higher place in the development. But it originally meant somebody who was of the nobility. So if you read like medieval and Renaissance works that contain the words gentle and noble, you have gentle and noble people oppressing peasants and killing Moors and doing all sorts of things that you wouldn't normally associate with the words gentle and noble these days. And the same thing with like the word daemon. Daemon has been demonized to mean like an evil spirit. But in the original Greek, daemon means a spirit that's in between. Mm. So angels are daemoness. So are a lot of nature spirits and things. They're between heaven and earth, belonging wholly to neither. So when people hear the word daemon, they think of something evil. In ancient Greek, it was kakodaimon, which means a bad intermediate spirit. And Socrates' higher self was referred to as his daemon. So keep that in mind.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And we've been discussing that some of the gods and goddesses and celestials that will come down will step down, so to speak, from on high to help the lowly humans or the lowly inhabitants of a sphere. Sometimes they are demonized. Sometimes they are looked at as bad, when in actuality they're not rebelling, but they're stepping down from their place on high to help in certain situations, you know, like Hades.
Like Hades. In modern times, he's thought of as a demonic figure. That wasn't the case in antiquity. He was just the keeper of the dead in some of the places that people go after death.
Right. You know, it's interesting, Hercules. I was reading that really in the Old Testament, they didn't really even know about fallen angels, so to speak, like we are talking about. And that really didn't even occur until you get into the later scriptures, you know. But so they didn't even talk about them. So it is interesting what has happened. Neo-Theosophy is the one that brought to our attention that Sanat Kumara was Gabriel. And then we thought, oh, my golly, you know, that is, you know, so interesting, you know, to find out all about him, because that gives a whole different perspective on a lot of these angels. And we began thinking, well, you know, maybe demonization is just simply that they are coming closer to the earth and therefore, of course, become more material. You know, I don't know if you recall, but we just found out that Gabriel said that he incarnated. In one of our meetings in the Chapel of Tomorrow, Gabriel said that he was the incarnation of Socrates. Now, I never even thought of that someone like Gabriel would incarnate like that. You know, I mean, you think about him coming to Mary and all, but maybe as a spirit, I don't know. But he's actually saying he actually incarnated as Socrates to try and bring truth to the people at that time, and even to show us how important truth is, that he took that hemlock. So this is something we've just recently learned, so about Gabriel.
And it makes a lot of sense what you're sharing. Socrates was, like Hephaestus, considered to be deformed in some ways. He wasn't considered attractive in the conventional sense of the word. And he was dedicated to truth and to speaking truth and to discovering truth, just like Hephaestus. You know, Hephaestus expressed his to his art, which wasn't words, it was metallurgy, but still it's that staying true to your truth and discovering your truth and sharing your truth in a useful way. So yes, I can see that, and you're absolutely correct. He has been associated because of the light bringer. Hephaestus is Lord of Fire.
Right. You know, it's interesting, too, that we only found out just this last year that I think we told you that it was Gabriel who was Mark II, who came to me in 1985 for those first 4 years of my knowing him. And also then he brought in the beautiful consort of his, and now we know that was, of course, Aphrodite or Venus. And we've just found that out just this year about him. So, you know, I mean, it is amazing. So many people tell me, oh, the gods don't intervene, you know, they don't bother us or anything, or even some of them say they don't care about us, they've got too many higher things. But my goodness, in our experience, these gods and these celestials are right there, right in front of our face, really trying to help us.
Yes, they communicate, they care about us. We're their children. If you look at it one way, if you look at it another way, we're part of them, you know, experiencing this.
Yeah, and we have spiritual fathers and mothers, you know, way up. And okay, so Hercules. So I was talking about the Lucifer rebellion. That Lucifer was, you know, a system sovereign over 1,000 inhabitable planets. And that this, our system's capital is Jerusalem, our solar system, that's what we're told. So there was a, so in the Urantia book, then they have a solution for the Lucifer rebellion, that Michael of Nebadon, who is also a local universe father in Zeus, you know, kind of makes arrangements for them to be, you know, for them to be gathered up so they can't do their rebellion anymore. but he also, Zeus puts himself in as the planetary sovereign, as the planetary prince. And Urantia, our world, has a history of planetary princes. We had a first planetary prince who was Caligastia. Caligastia went with Lucifer in the rebellion, so Caligastia is one of the bad guys in the past. Okay, so then what happens is the Lucifer rebellion is being adjudicated. Michael of Nebadon is the planetary prince currently. Lanaforge, Gautama, Dionysus is the system sovereign right now. Okay, so what's going to be happening here, Hercules? According to the Ranch book, what happens is, because of the Lucifer rebellion, we're usually on track to receive help from certain celestials at different epochs in time. Usually there's a planetary prince, and then after the planetary prince establishes some higher learning and higher function on Earth, then there's an Adam and an Eve that comes to upstep the races with their violet blood, okay? Well, Lucifer and Caligastia, they influence Eve to default, okay? This is kind of biblical basis. So Adam and Eve default, okay? They don't do it the right way. They don't upstep the race in the correct way, which leads to the intervention of the Melchizedeks. There is a group of 12 Melchizedeks called Emergency Melchizedeks. They come as a result of all of the rebellion throughout the system, and especially on our planet. One of those Melchizedeks, one of the 12, actually, according to the Urantia book, incarnated on our planet to help our planet. And his name was Machiaventa Melchizedek. Okay, so he becomes, because the sequence of events for celestial intervention gets disrupted, this emergency Melchizedek comes, Machiaventa Melchizedek. And then after Machiaventa Melchizedek works with Abraham to establish, you know, harmony, so to speak, religiously, then Jesus comes as the fourth epoch. The Urantia book is the fifth epoch, and Diane and I are sharing the sixth epoch with everyone. But I want to get back to Machiaventa Melchizedek, because Hercules, the main topic of this conversation is who are going to be the new king and queen of this earth, or planetary rulers of this earth, in line with what we've been saying, that the celestials are here and now helping us.
Great.
Okay. So, on, let's see, it was August 5th, August 5th, 2017, which was one of our early team meetings, celestial team meetings. On August 5th, 2017, we had four Melchizedeks come to speak with us. We've had many before and many after, but this was a really interesting team meeting. We had four Melchizedeks come to talk to us.
Yeah, they introduced themselves as four Melchizedeks. So.
Yeah, they introduced themselves to us as four Melchizedeks, okay? So we didn't know their names or anything like that, but we found out later who they were. Melchizedek number one came to us veiled, and we told you about that a number of years ago, Hercules,
yeah.
That you said, yes, you know, the gods do come veiled, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this gentleman came to us veiled, and we found out later that he was the Universal Father, of whom we read about in the Urantia book. He's the main god, main focus of the Urantia book. He is working with our planet at this time during Lord Maitreya's 50-year magisterial mission. Melchizedek number two, he came to us giving a personal message to all. He said, I'm going to be giving a personal message to each person during this magisterial mission of Lord Maitreya's. Okay. Well, we found out later that Melchizedek number two is none other than Hyperion.
Okay.
In the Greek tradition.
And that is the son of Uranus, one of his sons.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's known as he's known to us as the sun behind the sun, and he's also the father of Helios, one of the sun gods, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Selene, the moon.
And Eos.
Okay. Eos. All right.
The dawn. Eos, the dawn.
And we'll get back into Melchizedek number two in just a minute. Melchizedek number three was revealed to us later to be Iapetus in the Greek pantheon. He is also the son of Uranus and Gaia and is the male consort of Clymene. He's the brother of Hyperion, and in the ancient tradition, we found out that this Melchizedek number three, Iapetus, is known as Ta in the Egyptian, his divine consort being Sekhmet.
But he's also El-El-Yon.
Okay. I'm getting to that. Don't steal my thunder.
All right. Oh, dear. Michael's saying, don't get to that yet.
And then Melchizedek number four came to us, and he later revealed that his name is Pluton in the Greek, and we made a parallel, Pluton being Uriel, the archangel in the biblical Christian tradition. He is the son of Cronus and Rhea, whom we have found out is the second persons of Trinity in the Urantia book.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's... Those are the four Melchizedeks, Hercules, that said they're working with our planet right now during Lord Maitreya's 50-year magisterial mission, working with Zeus and Hera.
Social programs.
And working
social
with...
Social programs and everything.
With Gabriel mm-hmm. and Aphrodite on the New World Religion of Love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wanted to mention that Iapetus made the direct comment that he was working with social programs for all people, especially the poor and those who needed so much help at this time.
All right.
Yes.
So then we finally come full circle to Lord Maitreya's magisterial mission on Earth. He is to transform this Earth into a, you know, to have us function in a higher way, you know, like Gerald, our friend, says, in a fifth dimensional way, as opposed to third dimensional material, you know. Mm-hmm. So we're also members of Maitreya Great Tao, which is an Eastern spiritual tradition that combines Confucianism, Taoism, and Buddhism, that says Maitreya will be coming to make this earth a paradise, and everyone will have enough food and clothing and shelter, love. It'll be kind of like an Aquarian age of sorts, okay? So Lord Maitreya is going to be setting up Christ schools on this earth. He's going to make a new heaven and earth, according to this Eastern tradition and according to the sixth revelation. Okay.
Well, we're not saying he does physically. That will, of course, be the local universe father. He has said that he personally will make our earth into a new heaven and a new earth. So Michael is just talking about the after that is done, what is going to happen.
Yeah, he'll have the Christ schools after. The local universe father, Zeus, has said he's working with Maitreya and working with the planet. See, there's kind of like a twofold approach. There's the planetary or human, no, there's the human focus and the planetary focus. Zeus is going to be transforming our planet to
a new heaven and new earth.
And Lord Maitreya and Gabriel and Aphrodite are working with the humanity of the earth.
Yes.
All right? So Lord Maitreya is working with us, Gabriel, Aphrodite, Zeus, and Hera. Okay? Now, when the earth becomes a spinning ball of light, we will have a new king and queen of the earth. We'll have a new planetary prince and princess, or king and queen, new rulers.
But they are going to be inaugurated, so to speak, or the ceremony will be during our time, because right now are the very infant stages, but they are very important, and that's going to be on what we've already announced on your show, March 24th, 2023, and that will be the date that the ceremony will be for them, for Hyperion and Thea to take over this earth. And so that should be a really fabulous thing. Now, we're not saying that it's the age of Aquarius yet, but that is the date where Pluto will be entering Aquarius, although it will retrograde until June. It will go back into Capricorn. But then when it does, it'll stay there until 2043. So it's going to be a long, long age of Aquarius for us, from 2023 to 2043. So that sounds good, because I think everybody's ready for a really good period of time things are more positive.
So there's a really nice gentleman named Stuart Kerr III in the Urantia Book community, and he wrote an article on Machiavellian to Melchizedek, and they were really focused on Machiavellian to Melchizedek, you know, a couple of months ago. They even put out a whole issue on him, right? This is what it says in the Urantia Book, and it's also in Mr. Kerr's article, saying, and keep in mind the Lucifer Rebellion. Keep in mind the third epical revelation, which is Machiavellian to Melchizedek coming to rectify things. It says here in paper 55, today we await a possible formal arrival of Machiavellian to Melchizedek with the vicegerent mandate of the sovereignty of Urantia, or our earth. As acting planetary prince, he would likely continue in charge of the planet until the final adjudication of the Lucifer Rebellion. It is conjectured that when our world attains an era of light and life, Machiavellian to Melchizedek, now the vicegerent planetary prince of Urantia, you know, kind of second in command to Michael of Nebadon right now, who's the planetary prince, Machiavellian to Melchizedek will occupy the seat of the planetary sovereign. It has long been conjectured on Jerusalem that he will be accompanied by a son and daughter of the earthly Adam and Eve, who are now held on Edentia as wards of the Most Highs of Norlashadech. So if we go back to Machiavellian to Melchizedek, and if we go back to our second Melchizedek that visited us, we find the same celestial being. We find Machiavelli Melchizedek as Hyperion. Hyperion is Machiavelli Melchizedek and Hyperion. And Theo will be taking over as planetary sovereigns, this Machiavelli Melchizedek.
Yes, wow. Yes. And not only that, though, but Thea has given us some beautiful meetings in the backyard, and we're trying to get some of these videos up, so Michael will be working hard this summer and in the early fall to get these up, because we want people to hear her words, and she's given such beautiful messages, but she says she herself will be giving the new name for the Earth, and that's something that we'll be able to announce, too, but of course, not at this time, but in the future, she will tell us what the new name will be at the appropriate time. Probably, I would assume, it will be closer to the March 24th, 2023, the coronation ceremony. So she will rename the planet, and as I said, we'll try and get these videos up, because she really is beautiful, and I haven't really done her picture. I have done Hyperion, because he was one of the four Melchizedeks. Yeah, brother of Iapetus and another son of Uranus. So, but anyway, go ahead, Michael. He's pointing. Oh, I got to say something right away. He's ready. Here he is.
As you know, I haven't done a part two
of this topic.
Yeah, you know, we could get into Melchizedek number three, Iapetus.
Oh, he's something.
Okay, so I just wanted to mention there was another celestial team meeting we had, Hercules, and I think it was upstairs, or maybe it was out in the back in Maitreya's temple. Yeah, I think it was in Maitreya's temple out back. On October 27th, 2019, so this is 2 years after our Melchizedek team meeting, we had a celestial team meeting with Gabriel, and we've mentioned that he's the bright morning star, Sanat Kumara, Hephaestus, so on and so forth. So the meeting with Gabriel was also with Hyperion and Thea and seven other celestials. And this is what Gabriel proclaimed. He said, "I am here for the world. I am holding a lily in my left hand. I am proclaiming a new heaven and a new earth and a new king and queen, Hyperion and Thea. Hyperion, the sun behind the sun, and Thea, the lily of the valley. A new planetary prince will arrive in 2022 and be installed in 2023. They are living here on Earth now and traveling, but will ascend the throne later." And then my conclusion here is, this new planetary prince announced by Gabriel is none other than Machiavelli Melchizedek, who is Hyperion in the ancient Greek tradition.
Wow.
Well, what do you think, Hercules? What do you think about Hyperion and Iapetus? You know, in the Arantia book, they don't mention these other two as being even a part, except in names that we don't know, you know, to relate to them. It's like there's only two children of Uranus and Gaia, you know, just Oceanus and Tethys and Rhea and Cronus, you know. But there's two more couples there that are really important. And this is the thing, there's so many other children of all of these gods that are not given to us so that we can tell who they are when we read the Arantia book. So what do you think about our bringing into the light that these two important people are Hyperion and Iapetus?
Hyperion and Iapetus reigned during the Age of the Titans, which preceded the reign of the Olympians. And that was considered a golden age when the Titans ruled. You're right, we don't know that much about the Titans because of the rebellion in the Greek heavens, you know, where you had primordials were replaced by the Titans, and then the Titans were replaced by the Olympians, and we're now in a post-Olympian era that different people have categorized in different ways. I guess it won't make sense what we are until after we've been through it. But we're now in the age of humanity, according to the ancient ways of looking at things. And as we've spoken of many times before, the stories are arranged in such a way where they provide truths. And so the names in different schemas might be contradictory or might not be the same from one schema to another. However, if you go with what's there and just take it as something that has to be in the configuration that it is, it reveals to you a lot of the new truths if you understand the figures that are involved. I don't know if that's clarified or made vague, but...
Uh-huh. Yes?
Like, for instance, in most modern systems of Olympian spirituality, they only focus on Apollo or Helios before him as the sun. And
yes.
Ignore all the solar people that came before Helios and all the solar avatars who came after Helios. So we honor them all. But in a lot of systems, they just focus on one or the other or sometimes use them interchangeably. But again, whatever system you use, they're keys that unlock certain truths. So I'm really fascinated with all this that you're revealing through the configurations that you've been given.
Well, I just wanted to mention that the Titans, we are told that they are eternal. And the Arantxa book does indicate that to some degree, that they actually are eternal. The Universal Father and his consort, Tate or Tia or Gaia later, and also Cronus, his son, and Rhea, his daughter, and also Oceanus and Tethys, that they are eternal. Now, of course, we're learning, too. There's Iapetus and Hyperion, and they're eternal,
right,
too. But then the situation is, though, there is that break there. And then we are told that the local universe father, or Michael of Nebadon, or Zeus, and his consort Hera, and his brothers and sisters, Demeter and Poseidon, and, of course, Uriel and Hestia, are not eternal, but they have the possibility of becoming eternal. So we're told that they are a separate group because of that difference. Now, what we're also told, though, is there are different lineages coming down to Uranus and Tia, and those are the lineages that we're trying to get into now with Eros, love, and, of course,
yeah,
Isis up there, his mother. But I wanted to mention one thing, too. When we had our Spirit of Truth ceremony on February 3rd, 2014, it was during the early hours of the morning, 3:30 in the morning of that day, and when I woke up, I did see Gabriel. I saw him just like he was a human being, like I saw the Father, like I saw Zeus on the encounters. And he was right there, and later they told me that he was the facilitator of truth for that ceremony of truth that Michael and I took that morning with the local universe mother, who was Hera. So I actually saw him there, and he has been in our life as Mark II, the guide for Michael and I back from 1985, and then, of course, bringing us together, and then all of this with the Arantxa book, and then giving us this meeting of truth with Hera. And we did that, you know, on her, what would you call it, on her spacecraft. That was just as close as a breath. So Gabriel is the facilitator of truth, and I could believe that maybe he really was Socrates incarnating or a personification or something, because that truth thing, that is his story, and he really wants to put it out. Even the Rancher book says he's the facilitator of truth.
Spirit of truth, yeah.
Spirit of truth, yes.
I know in modern Greek households, when people try to figure out who killed Christ, the Romans or the Hebrews, Greeks say, it doesn't matter, we're all guilty, and they point out that the Greeks killed Socrates. So they equate that, that you can't start looking to groups of people and blaming them for things, that you have to accept blame for the things that you yourself did.
Of course.
Yeah, I was sorry about Hypatia.
Oh, my.
Yes.
Oh, dear. How terrible. Well, that was the beginning of the transformation from the Greek classical to the Roman and the Christian, you know.
Yes.
Well, I just wanted to finish up here with Melchizedek number 3. So Melchizedek number 2 is Machiavellian to Melchizedek, Hyperion. Hyperion and Theia will be the new planetary rulers in 2023. They'll give the Earth a new name, and the local universe father will continue to transform the world into a ball of spinning light, and a new heaven and new earth. But we'll have the Age of Aquarius first. The Age of Aquarius will be facilitated on Earth by Gabriel and Aphrodite with the new worldwide religion of love. Now, there's just a one more little excerpt from Stuart Kerr's article in our Urantia Book Mighty Messenger that I've been referencing. And it says, Machiavellian to Melchizedek was an emergency son from within our Creator Son and Creative Mother Spirit's local universe creation of Nebadon. This descending emergency son, Machiavellian to Melchizedek, came to our troubled world of Urantia 1,973 years before the birth of Christ. He materialized here in full adult form without mother or father and introduced himself as Melchizedek, priest of Elyon, the Most High, the one and only God. Elyon is the Most High God and is the divine creator of the stars and the firmament, and even of this very earth on which we live. He is also known as the Supreme God of Heaven. And Elyon is none other than Iapetus, brother of Hyperion / brother of Machiavellian to Melchizedek. Elyon, also known as Ta in the Egyptian, is one of the three Most High Constellation Fathers of Narlashadek. He is the reigning Most High Constellation Father of the three, and he was the one whom Machiavellian to Melchizedek was representing when he incarnated on Earth. He said, "I'm a priest of Elyon."
Mm-hmm.
And then Melchizedek number four, Pluton. But you know, they're all working together. In conclusion, we've got Lord Maitreya, and we've got Gabriel and Aphrodite, Zeus and Hera. You know, Hyperion, Theia, Dionysus, Persephone, all of our friends are up there working hard.
Yeah.
or down here working hard.
I don't know. well, what do you think, Hercules? Do you think that some of these gods are incarnating and not just Jesus?
Yes. In antiquity, in fact, Justin Martyr refers, when he's trying to describe Christianity to a pagan authority structure, he says that they have something very similar in the belief in the sons of Jupiter.
Oh.
And he started drawing comparisons between Christ and the sons of Jupiter. And starting in Egypt with Osiris and his story,
right.
A lot of the elements in the Osiris myth are prevalent in the Christian story as well, and in Greek too. In the Greek way of looking at things, there were many gods, and many of these gods had children with humanity, and these were the demigods, which...
Osiris happens to be the Infinite Father in the Urantia book, just to let you know.
Okay, so it's the mighty men of old that are spoken of in Genesis. And we must have the mighty women of old as well. But yes, it was possible, and also was possible for gods to walk the earth. Dionysus walked the earth, and epic poems of late antiquity was the Dionysiaca by Nonnus. which has hundreds and hundreds of pages of the adventures of Dionysus while he was incarnate and before he ascended and became one of the Olympians. Hercules, too, lived on Earth before he ascended.
Well, I was going to say, Hercules became Samson in the Bible. We know that.
Yes, yes. And a lot of heroes, Psyche, went to the underworld and then eventually rose to Olympus. Theseus descended to the underworld, but he got stuck there until he was freed, so he didn't ascend to Olympus. Castor and Polydeuces ascended to Olympus. Asclepius ascended to Olympus. So so there are lots of stories of higher powers incarnating, living among humanity, bringing something to the world, and then going back to where they came from.
Right.
Yeah, the Urantia book is really good in that it says that the gods come down to help us, and we go up to meet the gods. You know, we kind of work together in that way. Yeah, and that's nice.
Yeah.
And you know, Helena Blavatsky, the great the great mystic. They call her the mother of the New Age.
Yes.
She said that, you know, these rebellion stories are simply allegorical, where these gods and goddesses are up on high, so to speak, and they step themselves down into the purgatories and the hells, and that they're just doing their job, you know.
Right.
It's like some of us on Earth. I mean, we may be from different places too. You never know.
Uh-huh.
Coming to help the Earth, we have to step down and we have to take on these bodies and. Some people look at us as bad if we try to spread too much truth here and there or something like that, you know. So it must be tough. I don't know if it is for them. I don't know. It must be tough.
Well, Maitreya said it was tough, that he didn't really like it.
Are you guys...
We asked him, Alexander, our son, our 15-year-old son, he asked him, Maitreya, he says, do you like being a human, you know, when you come down? And he said, definitely not.
Are you both free next Thursday, same time?
I don't know if Michael is.
Let me check. So what would that be? That would be the 5th of August.
Do you have anything on the 6th or the 7th?
Let me see.
Because Michael's free on August 6th and 7th.
Let me see.
Or Saturday the 31st. But no, that's too close.
Saturday the 31st is taken, and the... 6th and 7th are taken. We'll work
something
out. What
about the 13th or the 14th?
I'm not that far on my list yet.
Maybe you put those down, August 13th or 14th, and we'll do it.
Yeah.
Okay, because this deserves a part two, and we only have 2 minutes more, and I'd like you to share your contact information. Thank you. This was very helpful, and it was very illuminating.
Well,
thank you,
Hercules. Appreciate the opportunity, really, because we're being flooded with a lot of information. Okay, so we have a YouTube channel. I think we have like 108. We just put up a video of one of our friends, Gerald T. Farley, reading some excerpts from his books. We have like 108, 109 videos now on our YouTube channel. It's called Michael and Diane Duncan. That's two N's for Diane and Duncan, like Dunkin' Donuts. Michael and Diane Duncan, and then also we have five Urantia book-inspired albums, and they are on Amazon, iTunes, Spotify, and other download and streaming sites. You could just Google Reverend Michael Duncan, and they will most likely come up on usually Amazon or iTunes is the first search. Okay, and then if you'd like to contact us personally, it's michaelduncan1@hotmail.com. And if you want to delve more into the Urantia book, urantiabook.org or truthbook.com.
Incredibly awesome. If I don't have a Blog Talk Radio slot, I'm starting Zoom shows very, very soon, in August, actually. So would you be open to having this on Zoom?
Well, at this time, we're having a little trouble with our internet connection.
We don't have internet, actually. have internet. The angels won't let us have internet in the home.
Okay.
And so the school had given Alex a hot spot to use, and I've let him use it outside the house, but they're picking it up on the 31st of July.
Yeah, they end the program on the 31st. They're giving out free hotspots to the kids. They end it on the 31st. So they have a couple links of where we can
You're cutting us off. To be continued. I'll call you tomorrow.
Okay. Well,
we'll
talk to you later. Thank you so much.
Right. Okay. Be well.
Bye.
Goodbye.
God bless.
God bless.